I just wanted to welcome everybody here. I'm Candace Winkler, and I'm the president and CEO here of the Alaska Community Foundation. And we're so pleased that you all could join us to hear from legendary George Atla. As many of you know, dog mushing is the official sport for the state of Alaska, and it certainly is a colorful part of our history and our culture. And I don't think anybody exemplifies that more than George. I think it's now over 50 years that you've been mushing. And George can kind of count in his list of accomplishments. He has won the Fur Rendezvous race 10 times. He also has run a couple of more endurance style races, even though I think you consider yourself to be a sprint racer, but he has run the Iditarod twice, and he also has run the Cusco 300 two times. But I think he really considers himself to be a speed guy, and his nickname is the Hooslia Hustler. So I think we're going to talk a little bit with George and hear about his mushing history and experience. But I think probably what might actually be a bigger part of George's legacy, even than his 50 years of sled dog racing, is the work that he's been doing throughout his life with youth and in this program that he is doing right now. That is the Frank Atla. I'm going to read the whole thing to get it right. It's the Frank Atla Youth and Sled Dog Care Mushing Program. And George and Kathy contacted the Alaska Community Foundation as they were working to set up their own 501c3. And we thought the work he was doing was just phenomenal and are partnering with them to be a sponsor to help them get up and start going on the work that they've been doing to raise some charitable funds while we're waiting to get their own 501c3. So we're pleased to have George here.
Great.
Thank you. I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here. I never imagined that this program was going to cost as much as it has. In fact, this past winter, the program has ran with no money at all volunteers from the village. And the village people, there's been about 50 of them that actually sign up to be volunteers and four dog kennels, and it's really been working. The kids have, the attitude of the kids has really came up. And 6 years ago, we were one of the worst schools in our district. And we have nine schools in our district. And now we've worked our way back to the top, So we have came a long ways this past winter. And, as far as success for the kids, as you could see from these pictures, that they had a lot of fun doing what they're doing. And it's actually worked its way into the school. The attitude of the kids has really improved. Down through the years, I've always had a bunch of kids. I had as many as 12 kids at one time, not all my own, but kids that were given to me. Or sort of, the parents that was having problems with them, and they say, here's a kid for you.
George, Kathy said that you kind of ran a juvenile delinquent home almost out of your house, right?
Yeah, and really, in reality, I never had one problem with one kid when they were growing up. And these guys, they're all grown up now and working, and they're all successful people. Getting satisfaction out of something you have done is, you can't buy that,
Well, George, when you were talking about the success of the students, I want to share. Kathy was telling me that the high school girls basketball team in Hooslia is going to the state championship, right? They're one of
Right.
16. They went to the state championship. They're one of 16 teams, And she was sharing that when all the GPAs were tallied, they had the highest GPA out of all of those 16 schools. And I think all of those girls are involved in your program. Is that right?
Yeah. Actually, I don't think it's 16 schools. It's 16 districts.
Oh, 16 districts. My goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And kind of tear up. So that's quite impressive and probably speaks volumes to, you know, some of we talked a little bit about the fact that your program helps them not only work on responsibility, but also mathematics and some academic elements, too.
All of that, plus the attitude of the kids. That's the biggest thing that we've noticed and the principal noticed is the attitude of the kids. The kids are happy, you know, and they're very satisfied with what they're doing. We've never had a kid that refused and said, no, I don't feel like working with the dogs today. Mm-hmm. They're always there. In fact, right now at home, the kids are still taking care of the dogs.
Right.
So I got it made.
right. Well, George, I want to talk, we do have a little video clip of the program, but I want to talk a little bit about just some of your experience because, you know, I know I'm interested and I know, you know, other folks in just hearing some of your experiences over 50 years as a racer. So let's talk a little bit about that and then we'll get back to the program.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I never went to a dog race when I was seriously racing. Ever thinking that I'm going to get beat. I mean, I do get beat, you know, but I never go to a race thinking I'm going to get beat. When someone beats me, yes, that's fine, you know, but I never go there with that attitude. And that's, in reality, what we're trying to install in the kids, you know. I mean, it's okay to get beat. There's nothing wrong with getting beat. You know, I usually tell them, but trying to give it your best shot, you know.
So what do you say to yourself that, you know, when you're going in, just, you know, I'm the best? Or, you know, how do you kind of psych yourself up that you're going to win?
Not only myself, my dogs, too, you know. I mean, from the time I start training in the fall time, I'd go out there to my dog yard and I'd say, we're champions, you know. We're not going to go to a race this winter thinking that we're going to get beat. We're going to win everything there is to win, you know.
Right.
It's just the attitude, you know.
Well, attitude takes you a long way, so that's great.
Yeah, it's okay to get beat. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. I mean, I've gotten beat more times than I ever won, you know. You know, but just go there with the attitude of winning, you know.
Right. Well, so tell us a little bit about what it is that you've run the Iditarod, you've run the Fur Ronde more than the Iditarod. And so what is it about going fast or speed or, you know, what is it about that form of racing that you gravitate towards versus the other?
I think it kind of depends on what you call the pleasures of life, you know. I mean, who wants to go out on a dog trail and freeze his butt for 10 days in a row, you know?
When you can get it over quickly, right?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, tell us a little bit about just some interesting, I mean, with the number of dogs that you've had over the years. I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the more interesting experiences. I read somewhere where you talked about each dog has his own or her own personality. And I'm wondering if you have a few that kind of stick out in your mind.
Well, I had a lead dog down through the years, you know, that was the best of the best, you know. And his name was Lingo. And he was a big male. And he was definitely the best of the best, you know. And that stuck in my mind, you know, because I've never seen one like that. I mean, the dog had so much strength that if you ask him to go faster, he'll almost take the sled away from your hands, you know. Mm. And it's an experience of a lifetime, you know, for a guy that did what I did, you know. I've dreamt about them kind of dogs all my life, you know, and I was fortunate enough to have one.
Have you found in general that male dogs are stronger than female, or was it just in this particular case?
Well, that's a tough question for the simple reason that I have to go home with Kathy. You
know? Right, right.
The males are physically stronger, right. You know. But of course, they're harder to train.
Right.
You know, harder to make listen.
That makes
to
sense
you,
to
you
me.
Yeah. And down through the years, most of my dogs were females.
Okay.
For the simple reason that the female could actually give you more than the males for a longer period of time.
Okay.
You know, give you their best. The males usually tire out because of their size, you know. But then you get exceptions, you know, like Lingo.
Good. Well, you know, with such a long, impressive career, it would be really easy to rest on your laurels. I mean, it's really impressive that you're kind of taking this next step. I mean, you know, as we talked about earlier, you've been acting as a mentor and, you know, almost fostering lots of children in your community for many years. But, you know, to go the path of a formal program, setting up a nonprofit, I think you're working with somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 kids right now. That's really impressive. Tell us a little bit about what kind of motivates you to do that.
Well, if a guy doesn't mind being bored, you know, you could leave the kids behind, you know. But the kids are, they have so much energy, you know, that at my age, I need some of that. I'd love to can some of their energy, you know. So, you know, and not only me, there's other elders that became involved in our village with the kids. And their attitude also changed, you know, they're happier. You know, just working with kids, you can't buy that. That's
right.
The way I look at it. Especially when you could have them all day and then say, I've had enough of you, you go home to mom.
Right, right. I've got 2 7-year-olds I could send home with you for a little bit. Well, you know, tell us a little bit. We were talking before a little bit about, you know, we know teen suicide is a big issue in the state of Alaska. And we were talking a little bit about how some of the programs, especially some of the programs that are funded at the federal level and the state level, really aren't reaching down into the community. And I want to kind of hear your thoughts a little bit more on that.
Yeah, to my way of thinking, when I was raised, when I was a young man, there was only one suicide in my village. When, you know, I must have been close to 30, you know, and there was only one suicide. Now, out in our villages, it almost happened every week, you know. And these suicide prevention programs that the federal government and the state have, to my way of thinking, no program is going to work unless it's being handled by the village that is trying to get the help, you know. And a lot of these programs that are out there, or, you know, that are out there in the world, we don't even hear about them. And as far as I know, like a village like Huslia, there is no money being channeled into the village, you know, for suicide prevention. And like I call a lot of different people about this, you know, people that are supposed to be in the know, that are supposed to be working for suicide prevention. And I, you know, I call them up and say, I never heard of you, you know. you're not out here. You know, where are you working at? You know, and on that subject, I'm not a very popular character. You know.
Well, you know, George, I mean, have you seen different issues over, you know, over the generations with kids? I mean, do you think that, you talked about how in your time you didn't see suicides. That wasn't something that happened. I mean, what do you sort of see happening with youth?
I think down through the years, the Indian people and, you know, the Indian people of the state have lost a tremendous amount of their pride for the simple reason that we were told to begin with, back when the Western ways first showed up, that we were doing things the wrong way. We couldn't even speak. We were not permitted in the schools to speak our own language, you know. So in reality, we've lost a lot of our pride, you know. And working with dogs in Hoosier, it's easy for me to say, this is where the pride of the village was. They were the village was a champion, you know. And our village was a very proud village, you know. And I'm hoping that some of these kids can bring that back. You know, for instance, I have a picture at home that has 12 dogs and a team that I was raising the rendezvous with in 1969. And the dogs had, there were 12 different owners in the team, you know. And everyone that had a dog in there had a lot of pride in that dog, you know, being a part of that team. And we don't have any of those sources anymore, you know.
I mean, I think that's what's so brilliant about the program that you're running, that really does focus on, you know, something that is so important to your culture, to the community. George joined a couple of us out at Valley of the Moon Park last Friday to talk with some of the youth who are working on the Youth Employment in the Parks program, and was just talking about, you know, the pride and the connection, you know, to dog mushing in the community. I don't know if you want to even just share a little bit about, you know, your experiences with that.
Yeah, for instance, one time I was offered $5,000 for one of my dogs, you know. And I know the guy didn't have a team. And I said, what do you want to give me $5,000 for this one dog? Well, he said, when you go by in a rendezvous, I want to be able to say, there goes my dog, you know. You know, that's how much pride there was in those teams back then. And, you know, one of the reasons I started working with the youth is that, for one thing, when I was a young man, I was also a very disturbed man, you know, a very disturbed young man. And actually, the dogs sort of bailed me out of that, you know. And I don't know where Kathy went, but, you know, right now she's saying that I'm a good guy, you know. She should have known me 50 years ago. I wasn't a very good guy.
What do you think the dogs brought to you? I mean, what were, you know, can you kind of tap into and articulate what were the things that raising dogs and getting involved in mushing did to turn your life around?
Well, dogs don't have a judgment. You know, dogs accept everybody on equal terms.
Right.
Where us humans have a fault with that, you know. And dogs are not like that. So once the dog actually connects with someone, you know, it makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's helping the kids, you know, because they don't, they just don't have a judgment at all, you know. They accept everybody.
I mean, that's a lesson in and of itself. Just thinking about, you know, for those of us who work with youth, just that idea of that unconditional love. I mean, so often when kids get on the path of getting into trouble, you know, often they're labeled and how they are treated and how they are interacting with the community or with other adults, you know, doesn't necessarily have that same. So I think that's a really important, even just as a, you know, human to human relation. But
yeah, I had, you know, in the last half a dozen years, we've got this guy at home, you know, that he didn't like dogs. But he would always come to my house, you know. And his name is Ross. So I'd say, Ross, why don't you take care of my dogs while I'm gone? And Ross would say, I don't want to have nothing to do with them dogs, you know. And but then he was going down to the dog yard with me when I was feeding them and that kind of stuff, you know. And he realized that the dogs didn't have any judgment. You know, and they accept him, and they were happy when they see him, you know. And it wasn't too long before he wanted to take care of the dogs,
right,
you know.
Right.
So that's just the way it is.
Well, so tell us who we have here. Who's this good-looking dog?
Boomer.
Yeah.
This is Boomer? Okay.
Boomer actually used to be my sled dog. She's a leader, and I believe she's won a few races, you know, and she doesn't look like a lead dog now.
No, she's pretty. That's right. We're glad you brought her. Yeah.
Yeah.
A retired dog.
Right.
When do you retire them? Like how long do they typically run?
They're good. For maybe they could run for 5 years at the most, you know, when in sprint racing.
Right.
So when they're 7 years old, mm-hmm. usually they're retired. They could still do it, you know, but they lose the interest in it,
right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, giving your best is it's a hard thing, you
sure.
know. To give you an idea about how strong a mind these Alaskan Huskies that we used to bring in from the village, how strong their minds were. I had a dog one time that was a leader, that I was in the rendezvous. About 16 miles, the dog keels over. He didn't show any signs of getting tired or anything. He keels over. And I run out there to pick him up. And the dog in his mind apparently was still running because his legs were still pumping.
Wow.
Those were the tough dogs that came from the village.
Right.
But today's dogs, you see one in the basket
right.
that's coming in, and he'd look around wagging his tail, you know. God, you know, I'm having a good time, you know.
Right, we were talking about your retriever, your pet dog
yeah.
that you got to go out hunting that no longer knew how to retrieve, right?
Right.
They've gotten soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kids, before we started the program, didn't know how to run dogs, didn't know how to hook up a dog. But over the winter, we teach them how to hook up dogs, how to care for the dogs, and they did all their own timing for these races, and you could see they had a lot of fun, you know. And now they can't wait till the snow flies again. You know, I want to impress on one thing here. One, in dog mushing, you get addicted. You know, you can't say, I don't feel like doing it today, you know. They have treatment for drug addicts. They have treatments for alcoholics. They don't have treatment for dog mushers, you know.
How old are the kids who are doing your racing?
They're anywhere from 6 to probably 16, you know. And yeah, they have, and there's only four kennels in Hooslea, you know, so the people that own the kennels are working all day, you know, and but I don't, you know. Yeah, Kathy does this.
He earned it.
But before that, my son used to, you know, my late son, Frank, actually died from asthma. And he used to love the kids running dogs, you know. So he used to be able to do this all day, work with these guys, you know. And yeah, one of the things that happened, you know, when we get teachers out in the village, I think the reason we have a big turnover of teachers out there. And I think one of the reasons is that these teachers, you know, you never know where they come from, what state that came from. They're not aware of a different culture out there.
Right.
And they have no way of, or they don't try to mix with the people, you know, because they're not trained to mix with the people once they get out there. And so I went to the school last fall and I said, you know, you guys are fenced in here, you know, and the only way you're going to get along with the community is you have to go out to their events, you know. And the way the school is set up, you know, you're right in the middle of the village and fenced in, you know, are you allowed to go out there, you know?
Right.
It's kind of a strange setup, really, in a way, you know. So the teachers started going out last fall, going out and mixing with the community, you know, because in reality, what's been happening in the past is these teachers come in, and it's almost like they were the enemy of the community, you know, and it wasn't very easy for them, you know. So I explained that to them, you know, that they have to mix with the community, you know. And that happened over the winter, and we usually have a change of teachers every year. This year, not one of our teachers is
leaving. That's great. So it kind of worked both ways.
Yeah, one is even, or two is even staying over the summer, you know. So there's been tremendous change out there. And the thing is, it didn't take much to do it, you know. I mean, why hadn't it been done before, you know? When I was racing, I didn't live in the village. I lived in North Pole, you know. And in fact, all my kids are now living, you know, in either Fairbanks or Anchorage, you know. And they're all, most of them are on oil fields, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our teachers mixing with the community, I think, was one of the biggest problems that we had over the years, you know, that they weren't mixing in. But now, you know, that the teachers in Hooslea, the doors open to them, to the community, you know they're welcome. The people is actually getting along better with the teachers. To give you an idea of how hard it is to be accepted in the village, years ago, when I was a young man, there was a priest that came in, you know, and he became a good friend of mine because back in those years, I was the leader of in the village, and there weren't very many people with education back then, and he was a well-educated man, you know. So I told him, hey, Don, you're going to help me. You know, you're going to do all the paperwork that has to be done, you know. It actually took the village 2 years to accept him. I mean, you know, that gives you an idea of how how hard it is.
So both encouraging the teachers to go out in the community, but also the fact, I mean, I think what's remarkable about this is these kids are all getting school credit for being a part of the program. And so this is a nonprofit that's coming in that's, you know, providing and working with the students, but they're getting academic credit for it.
Yeah, they're getting credit for it.
That's great.
Plus, I mean, what these dogs are doing for the kids is hard to imagine. Because we had one girl there that came to us last fall, and she was very shy and withdrawn, you know, and she was the quietest kid in the bunch, you know. And as she's working with the dogs, she came out of her shell. You know, and pretty soon she was wanting, you know, she'd start communicating with everybody, you know. And her dad came to us one day and said, thanks for working with with my girl, you know.
And that's great. That's really meaningful. And you talked about, and I think that's a great example of, you know, the leadership and the self-esteem and the confidence. But can you talk a little bit about academically some of the elements that, you know, I know there's some math involved. I mean, some of the other, you know, more academic pieces that they're sort of learning taking care of dogs?
Yeah, I think what it does more than anything is bring the attitude of the students up. You know, from my outlook, if a person is happy, the person will be a very productive person, you know. But if you're not happy, and the attitude of the parents was, in reality, the teachers were the enemies, you know, which is really bad. I mean, it was really bad. For instance, I got a call one time, and one of my kids got in trouble. So I went down to the school, and the other kid that got in trouble with my kid, you know, they were fighting. And the mother came up to me and said, I want to talk to you, you know. She said, it's not my kid's fault. It's the fault of the teacher. You know, to my way of thinking, that wasn't so, you know. So that's the way it was back then. I think the attitude of that has changed now. The teacher is correct, and you know, the students had made a mistake.
But George, you have a lot of volunteers that are involved in your program. I mean, I think you have upwards of 40 or 50 volunteers from the community. I mean, you have some real community support. Do you want to speak a little bit more to that as well?
Yeah, you know, I got the dog kennels. I'll speak about dog kennels first. We have four kennels that are involved in furnishing the dogs and helping teach the kids, you know, and that kind of stuff. And there is no pay involved. It's all volunteer. The kennels are all volunteering their service to the kids, you know. So, I mean, you can't, it's something, I think it actually worked better for the simple reason that there was no money involved. There was, you know, they voluntarily did all of this. And then the volunteers, you know, we call up the lady that usually work with the children and said, we need some volunteers. And then one day she had over 20 volunteers sign up, you know. So to have a dog team is a very expensive, you know, for the simple reason that you live out in the village. You buy a bag of dog food, which is about $1 a pound. By the time you get it to Huslia, it costs another $1 a pound just for the freight alone, you know. So So the expense of feeding the dogs, my team, probably the expense of feeding my team alone is about $15,000 a year. So, and most of it, most of us do it because we enjoy, you know, we enjoy the dogs. And then there's village races out there. And in the past, these dogs have been able to cover some of their own expense by racing and bringing money in. But now those races in the villages are dying, you know. So in reality, there's hardly any reason to keep a dog team out there, you know. And you're actually running into a lot of expense. But like I say, I'm addicted to it, you know. So.
How many dogs are your youth running? I mean, what's a typical size team for your middle schoolers or high schoolers?
You mean the size of the team?
Yeah, the size of the dog team that they're running.
Anywhere from, I think, 6 dogs on down to 2,
okay.
Or 1 dogger, you know.
Okay. Mm. Skeetering.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of calls from different villages across the state, you know, and they want to start a program.
Right.
But in reality, I couldn't expand the program without finances,
right.
You know. Because in our school district, we have 9 schools in our district, and there's at least 4 of them that want to go,
right.
You know, want to run a program like ours.
And probably need, you know, in addition to financing, I would think, you know, you can kind of only be so many places. So, you know, a real passionate advocate who knows how to work with the dogs and knows how to, you know, juggle all the different needs and how you sort of balance working dogs with.
It isn't going to be success in every village.
Right.
That's what I think. You know, it all depends on who's working with the kids. You know, it's that's my thinking. You know, I may be wrong. Hopefully.
Right. Wow. I mean, I really do think this is probably going to be your biggest legacy. I mean, your racing career is obviously. You know, you're the reigning champion of the Fur Rendezvous, but I think your leadership around working with our youth is really tremendous. Do other folks have some questions? Lukey.
You had talked about losing your language when you were younger in the schools. Is that a part of your program, is bringing in your native language into training and the cultural practices with the kids?
No, that hasn't been, you know, part of my program. You know, there it is being taught in some of the schools. But you know, in reality, even a guy my age that grew up with just speaking Indian at home. You know, we didn't speak any English when I was a kid. I grew up with it, and that's all I spoke until maybe I was 10 years old. And there are so few people that is speaking the language now, even I'm forgetting some of the words, you know. You know, so it's a very tough, we have friends that are working on that, you know. And, you know, we have the resource out in the villages. I mean, you know, we have the fish, and we have moose, caribous, you know, I mean, the people actually made a living off of that country years ago. That's how I was raised. And what's happening is the people in the villages are forgetting how to utilize their resource, you know. They don't know how to preserve food anymore, you know, and all that good stuff. And I'm hoping with this camp that we're hoping to start that the elders could start teaching the kids how to preserve food, you know, dried fish, and how we used to get our dog food, you know, because a lot of times, if you ask a kid in the village, what are you doing? They'd say, nothing, I'm just bored, you know. And so this is one of the things I'm hoping that there won't be no more people getting bored out there.
And so you're going to pull this into, will this be with the same youth that are involved in the sled dog work? Or is it, okay, so this will be just an extension of it and adding some more.
Yeah.
That's great.
It used to be a way of life.
Right.
You know? But now it's not a necessity no more. But I would say that if the country was to go hungry, I'd be the last one that's alive because I know how to get food.
Right, no, it's an important skill, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I don't remember going hungry one time. And we lived off the country.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of hard to imagine, you know.
But
I had a very happy childhood, you know. Yeah, you know, I heard someone ask my dad one time, he asked my dad, how did you guys survive during the Depression? My dad said, I didn't know there was a Depression.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So living out there and living off the country is a completely different lifestyle, you know.
And I think that goes hand in hand with also being able to preserve and respect those natural resources. I was recently in a conversation where we were talking about our salmon resources and how there are many parts of the world who used to have salmon and they have gone extinct, and how do we really preserve those for generations to come. And I think that's an important conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually changed, I think, not only the kids, it changed the thinking of the village, you know. Because, you know, before the winter was over, when there was a party in the village, and food had to be served and that kind of stuff, the children got up on their own and started doing this, which they never have before. I've never seen it before, you know, except when I was a kid. But now these kids are into it, you know. I mean, they're into that way of livelihood, you know. And it's hard to imagine because it was done through the dogs, you know. No, I had no imagination that, you know, the program would work as well as it did,
yeah.
You know. But I did know that the kids I had worked with down through the years are all good working people,
right.
You know. So naturally, when we went to work with these kids, I was hoping for the best,
right.
You know.
So do you think you've got any champions in there, or are you seeing some kids that are, you know, that are really that are really excelling? I mean, you know, you're young into it. As you said, you'll have.
Yeah, they all want to be champions.
Right.
I mean, all these kids want to be champions. They want to be the ones that race. But in reality, we know the amount of work that it takes to.
Right.
Yeah.
And are you mostly working with them on sort of speed racing, more the Fur Ronde style, or are you also, okay, so that's versus
more
endurance.
Yeah.
As you said, who wants 10 days out in the cold? And
yeah. Within the village of Huslia, there are all the best breeds in the state or in the country located right there, for the simple reason that when I hear someone has a good dog, I import one of his dogs, you know, and breed it into the group. And we have, I believe, the best breeds in the country right there in Hoosier, which in reality they used to have many years ago. You know, many years ago that the village of Hoosier or the Kike River area, you know, which is the village of Hoosier and Hughes and Allakaket, produced the best dogs in the world, you know. I've had dreams when I was racing of getting me a faster dog, you know.
Well, sounds like you've got some pretty fast ones, yeah.
Yeah, but we had a person come over from Europe that actually had a faster dog, a faster sled dog, you know. And I think he won the races maybe 6 years in a row, you know. But it's dogs are like everything else, they get old, you know. And I see we have a representative from Guarding Air here, and they helped me last winter. You know, they were the one of the companies that actually came and helped me.
Oh,
you know,
great.
So I want to say thank you. And I'm hoping to have another good winter like I had last year. You know, and my dreams, when I was raising my kids, I thought, well, when I get done raising my kids, I've had enough of kids, you know. But here I am, I found that I missed it, you know, after my kids left, I found that I missed it. So, in reality, working with these kids has been a lot of fun, you know, and I've enjoyed it, and I'm hoping to do it a few more years. Thank you.